On episode 13 of Climate Champions, I talk with Cassie Bowe. She's vice president at Energy Impact Partners, EIP, which is an investment firm focused on companies optimizing energy consumption and improving sustainable energy generation. We were both in Sunnyvale, California, attending Plug and Play Tech Center's Energy and Sustainability Selection Day. Big thanks to Wade and Marit at Plug and Play for setting up the interview. Companies they selected that day include, and I'm doing my best on the names, Climacell, Dex, Lichens, IntelliCharge, Microtech, Noiseless Acoustics, OnDaca, Prenav, Resec, Sapient Industries, SmartVid.io, SparkCharge, Stir Blue, Via Energy, and Xelectrics Power. I'm Lee Krivat, and on each episode of Climate Champions, I help spread the word about climate change by bringing the people that are helping to mitigate climate change into your living room, or brain, or at least your ears. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please check out my website at www.krivatenergyinnovations.com and send me an email. I'll let Cassie tell it herself, but she has a great climate champion background. She worked at SunPower, Jelly, PowerGen, and Omnidian before joining Energy Impact Partners. She was also named one of 30 under 30 in energy by Forbes. Welcome to Climate Champions. This is Lee Krivat, and my guest today is Cassie Bowe from Energy Impact Partners. Welcome to my podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you here. So first, I'd like to ask you, with regards to climate change, what was your first aha moment when you realized climate change was real and important and something you want to be involved with?
So I always grew up in an environmentally focused house. You know, we love the outdoors. We were in nature a lot. My mom was a kind of militant reuser to the point of, you know, microwaving a sponge 40 different times before throwing it away. So I always had that upbringing. But for me, the aha moment came in college. And I was a sophomore, and I was thinking about what internship to get. And I was a econ major at Harvard, and it seemed like, talking to all my peers, there were only two possible jobs in the world, which was investment banker or management consultant. And I was like, all right, I mean, these really don't appeal to me. I want to do something that has more of an impact, but, you know, I'm a business-oriented person. I'm going to have to take one of these two jobs. And I was actually at a party with my track team, and I was talking to my teammate, and he said, you know, I'm volunteering for a solar startup, and you should come on. And I kind of literally saw the light in that moment. And, you know, in my 19-year-old mind, I said, wow, I can combine business with something that I actually feel good about. And it was a kind of pretty simple notion then, but it was from that point forward, I started working for that startup. I got an internship at a solar company and have stayed in energy since. So I kind of approached it more from the, how am I going to frame my career in climate? And that's how I came to it.
You know, it's so exciting to be able to find a job that you not only like and good at and make you happy, but also you know that you're doing something really great for society.
Definitely. And I can't imagine it any other way. It makes me so excited to wake up every day and go to work.
Yeah, me too. Same reason. Can you talk about why it's personally important to you to do something?
For me, something that's always driven me is challenging the status quo. In the sixth grade, I tried out for the all-men's wrestling team with much encouragement from my dad and to the chagrin of my mom. But I didn't make the team, but it's been something that's always driven me. It's caused me to push for having more diversity in our industry and other things. And to me, it's really important to challenge the status quo to what everyone else is doing and what everyone else thinks we have to do. And in addition to, you know, all the reasons that we need to save our climate, that's another reason that I think drives me.
When you want to motivate others, or at least explain to others what climate change is, why it's important, and what you do, how do you talk about it?
So for me, as I said, I was an econ undergrad. I also went to business school. I was in operating companies, and now I'm in finance. The world that I live in is very much business and profit motivated. And so when I talk to people about climate and about sustainability and about energy, it's always in the lens of profit. I think it's actually a very clear story how climate is going to make companies more successful. And now I'm in a position where I'm talking to hundreds of companies a year that are making that the reality. And also a lot of other traditional incumbents that are seeing the future of, if they don't change, how that's going to drive into their profits. So that's something that I'm always trying to frame the issue in. And it resonates with a lot more people.
So it's all about the money.
Ultimately, I think it is. I mean, there are a lot of other arguments to make. Certain arguments will resonate with certain people. You know, I do think that it's most prominent if you're able to frame it that way.
I understand. I think ultimately that's going to make it successful or not, unless we have so many major events that even without profit or just to save the money it costs, people realize they have to do something proactive.
Yeah. And I think it does blow my mind how, you'll talk to highly educated people. You know, one of my classmates, for example, he's at the top business school in the country.
What business school is that?
That was Stanford. arguably the top. He formed his view on climate change, which was a view of climate denial, because he went to a trip to Patagonia and his trail guide, whose job is just to be a trail guide, not a climate scientist, said that they didn't believe climate change existed because of the natural cycles of the environment. And when you have an issue where a highly educated person is forming their opinion based on that sort of data point, it's really hard for me to try to get to that person in another way than through this business angle. It's such a just weird topic in that way.
I have had similar conversations. It's very difficult. Yeah, but money breaks through that. Definitely does. Tell me about Energy Impact Partners and what you do.
Energy Impact Partners, we are a venture capital fund, and we have a little under $700 million under management. What makes us a little different from other funds is that we raised about 80% of our capital from a group of 14 global utility companies. They represent 56 operating utilities. They have about 160 million customers between them and $250 billion in market cap. And what we do is we're financial investors, but we also bring this really interesting strategic angle to all of our investments. So for me, it was a really exciting place to go because it was this amazing intersection of working with the utilities, who are really on this one end of the spectrum, in terms of their company size and how long they've been around, and with the startups. And so we actually have more than half the people at our fund are on the strategy, business development, commercialization side, working with our utilities and our portfolio. And because of that, we've facilitated over 50 commercial deals between our portfolio and our network. It's about $85 million. And so we're really helping push along the energy ecosystem in that way.
I have been with two companies. I'm still with one of them where I tried to get EIP interested. I did not have that much success, some success, some conversations. But that's another story.
Well, we can't win them all.
I don't mind. I think it was for the best in both cases, but I just put it out there. I'm just putting it out there. So tell me about your journey from your two universities you talked about to EIP.
Yeah, so for me, throughout my career, the two guiding principles I've had or motivations are to change the way we power our worlds and to change the way we power our companies by having more diverse leadership. So those are the two things that I'm trying to optimize at all times. And when I started out, I went to SunPower, which is a large global vertically integrated solar company. And I started on the policy side because I realized that there's just no way to operate in this industry if you don't know really well the policies, how everything works, how everything is regulated. It's always going to be a highly regulated environment. We're never going to be, you know, the Ubers, Airbnbs, or Facebooks. And so I thought of that as the foundation of my energy career, and I learned a lot there. Moved then to the strategy team at SunPower. So we took the insights of how the laws and regulations were changing and said, okay, now what markets should we go to? Which was some great knowledge to have too. Then I went to business school. During school, I worked for three different energy tech startups. I thought of that time as kind of building the technology foundation of my career. A lot of people talk about in energy how there are three legs of the energy stool. So policy, technology, and finance. And so I've thought of the, you know, my career as being able to get that skill set together to make sure that we're succeeding.
The energy stool.
Yes. The energy stool. That's a term from one of my business school professors.
I have actually used the term energy stool.
You have.
And I meant it in a different way. I was talking about generation, solar and wind as being one piece of it.
Right.
Energy storage being another piece of
it. Yeah.
And the software to optimize between them and manage the system as the stool. But then I realized, well, you need long-term energy also. So it became a rectangle.
Or a chair.
Or a chair. Yeah, I like it. I'm stealing that. Thank you.
Well, you're in your energy chair. I now finally have my third leg of the stool, which is the finance piece. So after getting a little operating experience at the startups and learning about the tech, I worked at a storage software startup. I worked at a microgrid company in Kenya. And then I worked at a third-party solar asset management startup. I came over to Energy Impact Partners because I thought there was no other place that you could be in the industry where you were able to learn firsthand, front lines, what utilities are thinking, how investors are thinking about funding successful companies and how to raise capital, and then talking to all the exciting startups in the space.
You know, I've never wanted to have the job that you have, but the way you just described it, honestly, now I'm thinking, man, I wish I had done that, because you definitely get to learn from very important angles what's going on.
Yeah, it's so exciting just learning all the time.
That's awesome. What about setbacks that you've had in your career?
Yeah, so setbacks for me, you know, it's definitely a grind in energy. And it can be really hard to, you know, look at my friends who are all in jobs where there's sometimes a lot more growth or things like that. And, you know, here I am like grinding it out at an energy company. And I think it can be easy to kind of hop off the solar coaster and say, you know, this is too hard. This is not, you know, this is not the sexy Silicon Valley job. And that's been really hard at times. It's been especially hard because I've certainly seen a dearth of talent coming to the industry for those reasons. From my business school class, 63% of my classmates went to either tech, finance, or consulting, 63, and 3% went to clean tech, energy, including oil and gas, and environment, broadly defined.
That's sad.
And so that's sad because, you know,
this is like the problem of our time.
Yeah.
And we have these super smart people turning their backs on it, really.
Yeah. And so it's been hard to see that happening and you know, kind of get my hopes up for seeing more of a transition to the industry. But I think it also makes it all the more important to be in it. And I think it also, you know, in business school, one of the best classes I took was taught by Tyra Banks, the former supermodel.
She was on some reality television show that my daughter watched.
Yes, she's amazing. She's pivoted her career so many times. You know, to be able to turn being a supermodel into a lifelong
America's
career.
America's Got Talent, was she on that too?
So she started the show America's Next Top Model, and then she was a host on America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
She started a talk show, entrepreneur. And she said to us, in terms of how we should position ourselves, that different is better than better. And so when I think about, okay, how hard would it be to, you know, be a management consultant at one of these huge firms where I'm one of many people like me following this path that everyone else is following, to be better than everyone else at what everyone else is doing and to stand out is pretty hard. But when I think about only 3% of my class going into energy and clean tech, like, that's a huge opportunity. Like, that's what excites me. And it's, I'm excited to be different and doing something different, but I do wish we just had more young people going into it.
From my perspective, and no one's asking for it, just the pursuit of money and promotions and doing whatever you were trained in to get as much as you can, it's something that definitely took a lot of my life. A lot of my life was focused on that until I found a calling and something that I could do to really help the planet that mattered. It really changed my happiness level significantly.
Yep. How common was it when you were in school for folks to go into energy?
I'm very old. It was not common at all. I went to school for computer science. So I don't think anybody from my graduating class, in computer science at least, went into energy. Maybe some of the chemical engineers went into energy, or the chemistry majors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The computer science people, no way.
It is more common now. You know, there are signs of hope. Like, in my second year of business school, we had 100 members of the Energy Club, which was like 12% of the students were in the Energy Club, which was, you know, that's way more than it had ever been. We just need to work on converting those people to actually going into the industry.
I've spoken at UCSD and UC Berkeley and some other schools, UCLA, and a number of times students have come up to me afterwards, computer science majors and electrical engineers, and asked me for more information. And a number of times they've actually come to work for a utility.
Wow.
So that was pretty exciting. Although I don't know that I would have advised them to do that. I was still super excited to get them on our team.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of them have gone into startups in energy, which never would have happened before.
Right. Yeah. I think that's amazing.
So young people, it's more than it used to be.
Yeah.
But that's one of your desires, is to see more young people in the utility industry, right?
Yeah. And I think the problem is that people in energy place a huge premium on having experience in energy. And I think that's true in a lot of industries. But for us, it's such a complicated regulatory environment, understanding how all the pieces work together, that when people see a resume of someone who may be great and may be capable, but they don't have energy experience, they're likely to really discount that. So then you've got these young people who are saying, okay, well, I would love to go into clean tech. I would love to have a job where I believe in what I'm doing, but I not only have to take a pay cut, I also might have to take a role cut because people aren't going to value the experience that I had somewhere else.
I'm on the board of the advisory board of Sol Systems.
Mm-hmm.
They're a solar company in Washington, D.C. What I love is that Uri Horowitz, and I did interview him for one of my podcasts, he always talks about the mission with his entire team of young people, and they come to work for him and stay working for him because of that mission. Mm-hmm. And that's great to see.
Definitely.
So tell me about some of the great successes that you've had.
For me, the successes are in being able to look back on where the industry was when I started and where it is now. One of my biggest regrets is having been too young to have worked at Enron. Like, I love those war stories of being able to look,
I think you're happy you didn't work there.
Of being able to say, you know, I remember back when this was happening. And I've been in the industry, you know, I haven't been very long, but about 10 years now. And in that time, I'm able to say, wow, I remember when solar was, you know, we were getting PPAs for utility scale PPAs for, 12 cents, and we didn't know if we could make it. And now it's 2 cents. To me, being able to say, oh, I was at the first Energy Storage North America conference, and it was, you know, 5 booths, and now look at it now. Those are the kind of successes that I think are so interesting and exciting. And we're just going to keep having more of those. So, like, electric vehicle charging, that's, you know, we're going to say remember the days. And so I love those kind of successes.
I love saying remember the days.
Me too.
I have a lot of days to talk about. I love what's happening. It's kind of the dream that I had. When I used to talk about this actually happening People used to tell me it was science fiction, that it was never going to happen. I showed a picture of the Leaf before it was released, and I said, there can be a lot of these on the road. And the groups I talked to, utility, non-utility, regular people, said it's never going to happen. It's science fiction. So mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Definitely, yeah. And I think, yeah, the I told you so moments are always good ones, too.
So I asked about successes, and you didn't mention 30 Under 30 by Forbes in the 2018 energy part of that.
Yeah, that was definitely exciting. It's just a great group of people to be a part of, and definitely an honor. And, you know, for that nomination process, you know, talked about those kind of three legs of the stool and having, you know, been able to put those together in my short career before that time. And so it was definitely exciting, for sure.
And you also didn't talk a lot about women in energy. You talked about diversity, but mm-hmm. What do you want to see there? And what have you seen there?
In energy in particular, for the energy workforce, women represent about 20% of the workforce. In venture capital, it's about 7%.
Whoa!
I'm now at the – and 75% of venture funds have no women working there.
I'm thinking about the funds I know, and yes, yeah. I see that or yeah. don't see that.
Yeah. And so now I'm at, and then when you look at startups as well, I don't know the percentage offhand, but it's very low as well. And so now I'm at a role which is at the intersection of energy, venture, and entrepreneurship.
So you're the only woman.
So that's often the case.
Yeah.
And so for me, I think we have a lot of work to do. I think that being intentional about it is a really good first step. Everyone knowing baseline, like what percentage of women work at your company, you know, what kind of processes might you have in place that are helping or hurting that is really good. And, you know, for me, it's just been a personal mission of mine to, you know, have a really strong network of women that we can be helping each other in the industry, you know, trying to connect with senior women, being mentored to younger women. I think we have a really long way to go. And I think that it's really encouraging, but it's still, you know, it still hasn't changed nearly as much as it has to. As an industry, here we are trying to challenge the status quo for an industry to change when it has never changed in its whole history, right? We're saying, okay, you know, conventional fuels, utilities, we need to change this model. If we can't look also internally within our own companies and change how we're powering ourselves, then I don't know how we're going to be able to make that argument.
That's an awesome analogy, play on words. So tell me about your vision for what the future of energy is with regards to climate change or any other aspect you want to talk about on any time frame you want.
So at Energy Impact Partners, we see a lot of exciting industries, areas, and trends overlapping with our core energy space. So we're now looking at mobility companies. We're looking at industrial IoT. We're looking at cyber. We're looking at indoor agriculture. All these other areas that are coming to overlap with energy because we realize that energy and improving the way that we fuel companies and fuel our industries is this critical piece. And I think that more that happens organically, the more that energy and getting it right is going to become an obvious thing to people. And so I'm pretty excited about that. I think that that's already happening today. And then that's going to continue happening, I'd say, over the next 10 years. Once we can get to that point where energy is just an integral part of the conversation, then I think we're going to have a lot easier time addressing these issues. And that's something that I'm looking forward to.
Okay. Well, you described one tipping point. Mm-hmm. I think another tipping point is when the solution is economically there. So there's just no denying what to do from a cash perspective as well as from a what's right perspective.
Definitely. And I think to that point, you know, I can't wait for the time when Energy Impact Partners isn't our own fund looking at our own part of the sector, you know, that the rest of the venture world maybe hasn't invested as much money in. You know, once we're going to be the first ones who see when those solutions are making sense and making money, and they already are. And I'm just excited. So in venture, for example, in the peak in 2010 and 11, 16% of venture funding was going to clean tech, which is really high. It's since dropped to much lower than that. But, you know, I'm excited for once that tipping point happens, you know, all the companies that we're investing in are also going to be experiencing that. And everyone else is going to say, oh, yeah, this is the obvious thing that I'm looking at too, because it just makes sense. Not to bring it back to the
Well,
business point.
that will be an exciting time. Do you have any questions for me?
Have you noticed any common themes for other people that you've talked to on this podcast for what drives them?
So a common theme I am seeing is the idea of a childhood where the family appreciated nature and the environment and wanting to not lose that environment and to continue to have pristine places to go, to appreciate it and not have it all destroyed. I think there's a lot of movement to people that don't want things to have changed politically or maybe the way women are in the workforce. But there's also a set of people that want things to not have changed from when the world was green and clean and you could breathe the air and appreciate nature. So I think that's out there as well.
Very interesting.
I am going to wrap this up with a wrap. Well, Cassie chose energy. You might want to thank her because otherwise she might have been a banker. She's very passionate about diversity. She went to both Stanford and Harvard University. A lot of the industry, it seems like it's men's. Maybe that's why there's a cash lens. And as far as opinions, we really need hers. Let's power the world and power the leaders. She had a little analogy about energy being cool. It's important to get finance, tech, and policy the energy stool.
That was amazing. For people listening, there was no pause in the podcast. You did that in real time there. That was impressive.
Thank you, and thank you so much for being on Climate Champions.
Thank you.
Okay, for the first time, I really wish we had video. Cassie, not knowing my background in improv, had this awesome eyes popping out of her face, shocked reaction when I broke out into rap, or whatever that was. Cassie, the energy industry is lucky to have you and your passion for making a difference. It is people like you that will change the power dynamics in power leadership, bringing in diverse perspectives, especially from women and young people. If you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. And be sure to catch episode 14 next Monday when Eric Clifton, founder and CEO of Orison, discusses his cool-looking, install-it-yourself, behind-the-meter energy storage product. Like Cassie realized, I'm improvising the wrap-ups at the end of each episode. So if you're in San Diego and want some great laughs, most nights I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv, or both. To confirm specific dates, or if you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crivadenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. Cassie focuses on making investments in companies that are optimizing energy consumption and improving sustainable energy generation, both critical elements to mitigate climate change.